This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen, coming to you Tuesday, June 22nd, 2004. After more than 1,000 interviews during 16 months of investigation and 12 public hearings, the staff of the 9/11 Commission concluded Al-Qaeda is poised and determined to kill again. They stated specifically in their staff report number 15, Overview of the Enemy, delivered Wednesday, June 15th. Al-Qaeda remains extremely interested in conducting chemical, biological, radiological, or nuclear attacks. Al-Qaeda continues to pursue its strategic objective of obtaining a nuclear weapon. Likewise, it remains interested in using a radiological dispersal device, or dirty bomb, a conventional explosive designed to spread radioactive material. Al-Qaeda's ability to conduct an anthrax attack is one of the most immediate threats the United States is likely to face. Similarly, Al-Qaeda may seek to conduct a chemical attack by using widely available industrial chemicals or by attacking a chemical plant or shipment of hazardous materials. Al-Qaeda is actively striving, the staff concluded, to attack the United States and inflict mass casualties. The question is not if, but when. Today on Taking Aim, the Great Deception, Fake Terror, and a System in Crisis. Ralph?
Today, Merrill Lynch published a report which documents the disparity in income for people across this suffering planet. The Merrill Lynch document, which is rather extraordinary given its source, states and establishes in documents that 1% of the world's population now earns more than the combined total of the rest of the 60% of the population of the world. But what's particularly instructive about this is that the average income of this 1% of the privileged, according to the Merrill Lynch report, is $24,000 a year. $24,000 a year is chump change for the billionaires, for the 100 millionaires, for the true elite and ruling oligarchy of this planet. What we're really talking about here is a multiple exaggeration of the actual disparity. And Merrill Lynch's report describes it as a situation of terminal crisis for the vast majority of the population. It is not 1%. It is 1/1000th of 1%. Because the real income of the controlling few is in the billions and not $24,000 a year, which is chump change that they spend on a weekend or a week in one of their watering holes. The system in crisis is combined with a situation that is again described by Merrill Lynch, in which the deficit financing and the debt structure of American capital is such that at any moment the currency may collapse and the debt may be called in, causing systemic crisis that will dwarf the events of the Great Depression. That is the true context, that is the true significance, that is the true underlying meaning of the terror, the contrivance of terror, as a rationale for waging a repressive class war against a population that cannot long be expected to tolerate disparities of this historic magnitude.
Global Threats and Challenges. That was the title of Vice Admiral Thomas R. Wilson, the director of the Defense Intelligence Agency's report before the Senate Armed Services Committee, March 19, 2002. And in it, he referred to the have-nots, the, quote, globalization losers, too poor, uneducated, badly governed, or otherwise disadvantaged to reap the benefits of political and economic openness. He stated these, the conditions in which they live are fertile ground for political, ethnic, ideological, and religious extremism, and their frustration is increasingly directed at the United States and the West. In the globalized world, we ignore them at our own peril. And he goes on to say that we must prepare for defense. 1,000 interviews, 16 months of investigation, 12 public hearings, and you get a top CIA counterterrorism official who only identified themselves as Dr. K before the panel, stating, quote, "It may strike," referring to Al-Qaeda, "next week, next month, or next year, but it will strike." And yet, if you go and you read these reports and you look at all the investigations that have come before us, you do not see a scintilla of evidence. No evidence that Al-Qaeda is striking. No evidence to substantiate the terror alerts, the unending terror alerts, ever since September 11, 2001. The four faces of nuclear terrorism. The four faces of nuclear terrorism is the result of a two-year study by the authoritative Center for Nonproliferation Studies, or CNS, at California's Monterey Institute of International Studies. Authoritative for the ruling class. And on June 18, 2004, in an article entitled "Experts, Dirty Bomb Attack Likely Since Materials Are Hard to Control," the center concluded that terrorists are, quote, all but certain to set off a radiological weapon in the United States. And their reason? The reason is because it is possible. Now, this is the same reason that the investigators conclude, the investigators for the 9/11 Commission. And yet, if you look at the evidence that had been presented about a dirty bomb attack, the supposed planned dirty bomb attack of Jose Padilla, you find, again, from the Associated Press, an important report, June 10, 2004. Scientists say that the dirty bomb would be a dud. The Justice Department felt, finally, since there was so much hue and cry about the fact that they kept on talking about Jose Padilla and his supposed dirty bomb without presenting any evidence, on June 1st they held a news conference in which they said that Jose Padilla had, quote, hoped to attack Americans by detonating uranium wrapped with explosives, and such he would be able to spread radioactivity throughout the United States. But scientists heard this news conference, and nuclear physicist Peter D. Zimmerman of King's College in London made a statement, quote, "I use a 20-pound brick of uranium as a doorstop in my office because uranium has extremely low radioactivity and is harmless compared with high radiation materials such as cesium or cobalt isotopes that are used in the medical industry and that experts would see as the potential for dirty bomb fuels." Yet, what did the Justice Department say? Uranium wrapped with explosives. Ralph?
Maya, we're going to deal in a systematic way with the beating of the drum for radiological and biological and chemical attacks that are supposed to devastate the United States every week since 2002. The threat warnings and the fake terror alerts have been forthcoming from every quarter of the establishment of the national security establishment in the United States. Before doing that, I want to return for a moment to your source, Vice Admiral Thomas Wilson, Director of the Defense Intelligence Agency, in his remarkable testimony before the Senate Armed Services Committee, March 19, 2002, Global Threats and Challenges.
We should say that it's remarkable because it's so blatant about the intent of U.S. rulers.
Yes. He states the post-Cold War period ended on the 11th of September. The next decades will be defined as the struggle over globalization. Of course, globalization is a catchphrase, both on the part of liberals and on the part of the ruling order, for the control by the capitalist ruling class of the resources and labor of the world, and the driving of labor wages down, and the extraction of resources and raw materials directly through military control. That is the globalization that Karl Marx and Friedrich Engels described so eloquently in the Communist Manifesto itself in 1848. But the head of the DIA states, the values and concepts of political and economic control carried forward on the tide of globalization with money and technology at highest speeds and few restrictions is being challenged. Globalization is now being equated with Americanization, and the United States is seen as the principal architect and primary beneficiary of this order. The United States is blamed for what's wrong in the world among states and groups and individuals and great movements who worry about U.S. hegemony and are now unhappy with the present and perceived future. They will use globalization against us. The 11th of September attacks are about the unemployed, the youth, those who are no longer accepting declining living standards, decaying infrastructures, adopting an extremist message and attacking our globalization and our control. And that is why, he says, they target our homeland to strike a blow against globalization, against global control. These extremists and their allies, both abroad and at home, understand that their desired world cannot coexist with our control. Nothing could be more explicit and more clear. This is a statement of the permanent control by the U.S. ruling class of a world in crisis, and the growing resistance on the part of whole populations, both at home and abroad, is the real genesis of the threat. Global threats and challenges, the prospect of terror, is a cover for class repression. And that is the meaning of the drumbeat. The drumbeat about terror, 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 the constant litany of fake attacks that are being contrived by the intelligence agencies themselves to whipsaw our people into numbed acquiescence in the permanent control of a decaying ruling class.
Yes, Ralph, Vice Admiral Wilson talks about the asymmetric threat, meaning an attack against a mighty power by a small. He says, make no mistake, we are the target. Our adversaries believe they must derail the emerging world order or be overcome by it. Now, this is the blowback theory, but as we know, it's neither blowback theory or other theories. It was a staged setup, 9/11, in order to institute the rescue the system in crisis with the huge spending for the military-industrial complex to institute, as Wilson so markedly points out, the control over the populace, because he says it is our open society that allows something like this to take place.
By something like this, he means the prospect of terror, the constant litany of Al-Qaeda. It's our open society that facilitates attacks upon the ruling order and upon the system of global control that our rulers require.
But what is so remarkable, Ralph, is that even when the Justice Department and the Pentagon, when they come forward with their supposed terror perpetrators, that they can't even get it right. And again, I have to return to the Jose Padilla and supposed dirty bomb attack. And as we mentioned, uranium is harmless compared with high radiation materials. And Dr. Zimmerman, Peter Zimmerman, a noted nuclear physicist, also goes on to say that he found it extremely disturbing because you cannot make a radiological dispersal device with uranium. There is just no significant radiation hazards. And Ivan Ulrich of the Federation of American Scientists, who have the remarkable website, FAS.org, on the Internet, stated, quote, it's the equivalent of blowing up lead. So that if everyone remembers, in June 2002, when Jose Padilla was arrested when he was returning to Chicago Airport from a trip to Afghanistan and Pakistan, Attorney General John Ashcroft had said that Padilla had planned a dirty bomb that would, quote, cause mass death and injury, that Washington, D.C. was his likely target. And after maintaining him incommunicado, a U.S. citizen incommunicado, without contact with an attorney, without contact with his family, this is what they come up with, that Padilla was going to have a block of uranium wrapped with explosives. And what the Justice Department had said is that they held this news conference, quote, to help people understand the nature of the threat that Padilla posed. And yet scientists quickly put the Justice Department facts, exposed them right to the light of day to show us that Padilla, in fact, if this is what he had intended, and no one ever believes that this is what Padilla intended, that this certainly was not any dirty bomb attack. Ralph.
The dirty bomb threat is part of the overall contrivance that we've been citing over and over again as the fake category of terror. The hearings, the 9/11 Commission hearings, began with a staff report that stated that Osama bin Laden had the intention of killing as many civilians as possible, as frequently as possible, within the United States. In 1998, a rather interesting source for the declaration that bin Laden has issued an edict, quote, calling for the killing of all Americans. The Jewish Virtual Library, which was an extension of the Mossad, disseminated a purported edict of Osama bin Laden, one which he himself has repudiated as not his own, which stipulated that the fatwa that was imputed to Osama bin Laden at that time called for the killing of as many Americans as possible, as frequently as possible, and notably within the United States itself. And it made specific reference both to nuclear and to biological and to chemical weapons. Now, that theme in 1998 was continued by CNN on June 16, 1999, bin Laden preparing biochemical attacks on the United States. U.S. officials state that suspected terrorist Osama bin Laden, this is 1999, is in the final stages of planning an attack against the United States. Speaking on conditions of anonymity, high U.S. officials told CNN that the targets would be within the United States itself, on U.S. soil, including Washington, D.C. June 16, 1999, a headline piece, bin Laden planning terrorist attack with the United States. The officials believe the planning for this attack is in the advanced and final stages. This is the result, they state, of intercepted communications and other intelligence gathering methods. After the embassy bombings, the United States had launched cruise missile attacks against camps supposedly or allegedly used by bin Laden in Afghanistan, and bombed a suspected munitions plant in Sudan, the article continues. That munitions plant, of course, in Sudan was long disclosed to be a pharmaceutical plant having no relationship either to chemicals or to Al-Qaeda. But the article is a map, an outline, not only of the 9/11 attacks that were to come, but of the propaganda apparatus of the United States intelligence officials and the rulers in preparing the public for the very theme that is reiterated week by week, month by month, from 1999 right through 9/11 to the present day, through the constant litany since December 2003 to the present moment, the next attack, sabotaging the elections, a radiological attack across the United States.
Yes, Ralph. On June 18th, President Bush, speaking to troops in Fort Lewis, Washington, repeated his popular phrase, quote, on September the 11th, 2001, we learned that threats gathering on the other side of the world can arrive suddenly and bring tragedy to our great nation. On that day, the enemy declared war on the United States of America, and war is what they got. War is what they got, and really, that is the purpose for the 9/11 attacks. As Patrick Fitzgerald, U.S. Attorney for the Northern District of Illinois, told the 9/11 Commission this last week, Al-Qaeda is like a cancer that metastasized and spread, and it's terrible. Remember, the staff concluded, Al-Qaeda is actively striving to attack the United States and inflict mass casualties. Mass casualties. And yet there is no evidence, but there is evidence that the United States rulers have diverted hundreds of millions of dollars to homeland security and to the arsenals of war. The United States has an estimated 2 million licensed radioactive sources, and thousands of these are high-risk materials, according to CNS. Now, what these 2 million licensed radioactive sources are X-rays, MRI, CAT scan equipment, all the medical devices that you find commonly in doctors' offices and hospitals. As well, the food industry uses radioactivity inappropriately, I might add, for the irradiation of food. And it's these sources that CNS and government officials say are the contact sources for the supposed dirty bombs. The Energy Department itself has collected 7,500 sources, radioactive sources, that have been thrown out, basically. They call it disused, and they expect thousands more in the future. And yet they cannot keep track of it all. And as a consequence, they've come up with this hypothetical Al-Qaeda dirty bomb attack.
Maya, this theme and this propaganda and this fakery has been constant. We've cited 1998 and 1999. Here's Dawn magazine in Pakistan, November 10th, 2001. Osama claims he has nukes. Osama bin Laden has said we have chemical and nuclear weapons and we reserve the right to use them. And the article continues to attribute to Osama bin Laden things which he himself had repudiated in the interview he gave to Umat, but fathering upon him this constant theme of biological and chemical attack.
Ralph came across a very interesting article, The Year of Fear, and it's from a Canadian publication, CTV. And the CTV news staff compiled on December 30th, 2002, at the end of 2002, a mass, 100 attacks that had been supposedly foiled in 1 year alone, according to FBI Director Robert Mueller. And these were between September 11, 2001 and 2002. But if you go through this extensive compilation, and I think we should go through some of them here on the air, you find that there's no evidence that there was ever any attack and that it was all supposition, all contrived terror alerts. The numerous FBI warnings created unnecessary fear and panic, according to CTV. For instance, the FBI released a warning in November of 2002 in which it said that hospitals in major U.S. cities might be targeted during the holiday season. But if you look at it, the heightened level of awareness was what they said was due to the revelations that agents had originally ignored the September 11th warnings, and they didn't want to be stuck again. But in fact, the FBI had no evidence. Now, the reason the FBI was saying this is because Colleen Rowley, the FBI agent, had sent a scathing memo in May that criticized the agency, and so now the agency was saying that it was going to send out warnings and not be caught again.
Maya, this is only a part of that story. What the essential gravamen of this year of fear, top terror alerts of 2002, is that by design, virtually every week, a terror attack and its imminence was being contrived. January 17th, FBI instructs 18,000 law enforcement agency and high-tech companies to be alert for a cyber attack. January 23rd, Nuclear Regulatory Commission sends confidential memo to power plants nationwide, warning of imminent terrorist attacks in which hijackers will fly a commercial plane into a nuclear power plant.
Ralph, let's look at the fact that there is no basis for any of this. On that first alert, it did not specify a geographic region or time frame. And on that January 22nd nuclear alert, the FBI admitted that it was based on old, unverified information.
But the core point is this. None of these contrived attacks that they're constantly beguiling us with, regaling us with these prospects of imminent disastrous and calamitous attacks that involve the radiological poisoning of hundreds of thousands of people, ever stand up to scrutiny. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. The evidentiary basis is utterly besides the point. It is the big lie being orchestrated through government propaganda. That is the essential role of the 9/11 Commission hearings themselves, and that is why it is so appalling that commentators should not note the absence of evidence and the contrivance, the fakery of data. None of these contrived attacks stand up to scrutiny. When they're imputed to Osama bin Laden or to figures like al-Zarqawi, the fact that Osama bin Laden has himself repudiated any such claims never goes noticed. The fact that al-Zarqawi has been dead for a substantial period of time prior to the imputation to him of these activities doesn't go noticed, and when it is noticed, it's passed by. January 23rd, February 11th, FBI issue a terrorist alert. U.S. law enforcement and the public to be on the lookout for imminent terrorist attacks. February 23rd, this is all 2002. Police presence and security placed around the Liberty Bell in Philadelphia. An imminent attack on the on America's historic symbol. March 12th, U.S. Homeland Security Tom Ridge, a new terror system of alert is being introduced because of the imminence of a wide-scale terror attack within the United States. April 19th, FBI warns publicly, warning that over 1,200 banks in the northeast of the United States are imminent targets of terrorist attack. May 13th, U.S. intelligence officials, threats of attacks on nuclear plants in the Three Mile Island facility on or around July 4th. May 22nd, this is all 2002. New York authorities closed the Brooklyn Bridge. The bridge is subject to a threat against New York landmarks such as the bridge and the Statue of Liberty, reported the day earlier. Let me pause a moment to state that today is the opening trial of that heroic attorney for all of us, Lynn Stewart, who is being charged with allowing her client to confide information to her about his defense and to attempt to give statements to the public that supports him regarding the illicit nature of the evidence against him. The crime against the charges against Lynn Stewart are that she was defending her client. And the gravamen of this is that the landmark case that I've just referred to, the Brooklyn Bridge and the other landmarks, was an FBI operation, an FBI provocation of Imad Ali Salem, that we so often documented with reference to the 1993 attacks. To continue with 2002. May 24th, FBI warns the Nuclear Regulatory Commission and National Transportation Safety Board. imminent attacks through small aircraft and underwater divers. Nuclear plants are on a state of alert. June 8th, U.S. Coast Guard issues warning. Credible immediate threat from terrorist swimmers and divers in Washington's Puget Sound. June 10th, the arrest of a man planning to detonate a radioactive dirty bomb in the United States. Attorney General John Ashcroft states Al-Qaeda is planning the bombing. June 21st, FBI officials issue warning to authorities across the United States. Terrorists will use fuel tanker trucks as weapons to attack Jewish neighborhoods, schools, and synagogues. July 12th, authorities around Houston, Texas, and Pasadena, Texas, have been warned by the FBI of a terrorism plot to target the oil refineries in Pasadena, Texas, and Pasadena, California.
Where there are no refineries.
There are no refineries in Pasadena, California, but presumably the terrorists, like the FBI, get confused about what state is which in the United States. August 9th, U.S. Office of Homeland Security. Attack on American sites. California Governor Gray Davis issues a warning of threat to San Francisco Golden Gate Bridge. September 10th, nationwide terror alert to the second highest level. Embassies overseas and federal buildings and landmarks are under high security clearance for imminent attack. October 10th, FBI citing public statements from Al-Qaeda. The U.S. is on the verge of being targeted for a major attack. October 25th, 2002. New terror alert warning law officials that have stated that Al-Qaeda operatives are planning a wholesale attack on U.S. railways, targeting trains carrying hazardous materials, petroleum sector, and other systems of transportation. November 14th, Canadian newspapers release terror targets in Canada, Toronto CN Tower, the Parliament buildings in Ottawa, the Confederation Bridge between New Brunswick and PEI. There are at least 20 more such alerts for the year 2002, not just alerts, but a formal official declaration of imminent terror attacks, not a single one of them having any basis in fact. Just 2002 alone, the contrivance, the fakery, the terror threat to intimidate, to cow, to subdue, to oppress the population of North America.
You are listening to Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, The Great Deception, Fake Terror and a System in Crisis. This is WBAI 99.5 FM in New York and on the internet at www.wbai.org. Now, Ralph mentioned the trial of Lynn Stewart. Today, June 22nd, the opening statements were made in court. And Lynn and we and all Lynn supporters are asking those of you in the New York area to attend the court, the trial. The attendance has been so great and the support for Lynn overwhelming that the court was forced to move the trial to a larger courtroom. During the pretrial motions, it's very important that we show our support and attendance. Please get there by 9 a.m. The proceedings usually start by 10, but you need to get there early in order to get everyone settled in the courtroom. If you are visiting the New York area, take a break and come to court. The court is at 40 Foley, F-O-L-E-Y Square, in New York, and it's room 110. This is the old federal courthouse. The judge is John G. Kotel, K-O-E-L-T-L. And again, this is going to be every day throughout the summer. Please, this is the most important trial taking place now, and the defense of Lynn Stewart is a defense of each and every one of us. Again, this is 40 Foley Square, each day, room 110, the old federal courthouse. Ralph.
Maya, dirty bombs, radiological weapons, chemical weapons. Here is CBS News on March 11th, 2003. The world's first dirty bomb conference. Scientists, police commanders, and government officials from over 100 countries are converging on Vienna for the world's first dirty bomb conference. Governments are concerned. U.S. experts conclude that tens of thousands of the most dangerous radiation sources worldwide used to treat cancer, find oil deposits, disinfect food, are insufficiently protected, and a dirty bomb, a conventional explosive combined with radioactive material, yet to be detonated anywhere, is being prepared by the Al-Qaeda network. And the article goes on to detail how over 600 specialists, customs and law enforcement officers, regulatory officials are being prepared to treat forms of radiation explosive detonated in the United States. That article is followed by a rather revealing one. Again, CBS, Vienna, Austria, March 14, 2003. The United States tests dirty bombs. In New Mexico desert and in the Russia's Ural Mountains, U.S. and the Russians combined are experimenting with dirty bombs to measure how radiation weapons may work. Officials of the two countries say it is a sensitive area in which information is withheld, but American specialists preparing for the testing of dirty bombs disclosed the recent testing because a high-ranking U.S. official stated that this indeed is a priority for the United States Department of Defense. The dirty bombs that combine conventional explosives with strontium, cesium, and highly radioactive isotopes, such as are used in cancer radiotherapy, as I mentioned, searching for oil deposits and sterilizing food, are actually being tested by the Department of Defense in a crash program, CBS discloses. Who are the real terrorists, brothers and sisters? What is the genesis for all of this blah about radiological weapons? It's very clear. The Department of Defense, the national security apparatus, it is the rulers of this country who are the authors of these radiological weapons, and who control them, who are preparing them, who are testing them, and who are menacing us with them.
Ralph, our listeners will remember our premium where we spoke of the Euro Army and the Israeli Intelligence Disinformation Service, DEPCA, had reported that throughout Europe there was a massive Euro Army of white army being recruited in the coffee shops, the coffee shop army, to replace the people from the Arab world, from Algeria, from Tunisia, that would support the Al-Qaeda network. Yet, in Great Britain, the one of the defense think tanks, the International Institute for Strategic Studies, which produces each year a strategic survey, 2003-04, probably didn't read or did read the DEPCA studies, but came out with its own study of the Al-Qaeda force. And this has been taken up by CBS News and newspapers throughout the world. A report of Al-Qaeda, 18,000 strong, and released on May 25, 2004, following a press conference that was held by the International Institute for Strategic Studies, and including its director and some of the staff. Now, they said that Al-Qaeda still has a functioning leadership in 60 nations around the world, and it is likely to attack soon and attack with great strength. As the director of the Institute, John Chipman, stated, Al-Qaeda must be expected to keep trying to develop more promising plans for terrorist operations in North America and Europe, potentially involving weapons of mass destruction. As you recalled from the beginning of our show, the same conclusion of the 9/11 Commission staff. And that they will attack soft targets encompassing Americans, Europeans, and Israelis and aid the insurgency in Iraq. The Institute concludes that Al-Qaeda is decentralized and will rely to a greater extent on the heavy lifting of terrorist attacks of local groups and affiliates. Now, they base their a conclusion on the fact that they Al-Qaeda supposedly had 20,000 fighters in training camps in Afghanistan, although they give no basis for those numbers, just like DEPCA gives no basis for its numbers of the 100,000-strong Euro army of Al-Qaeda. And they say that 2,000 Al-Qaeda fighters have been killed or captured. The supposed Al-Qaeda fighters, those in Guantanamo, which it has been revealed, very few have any relationship to Al-Qaeda. And if they had any relationship, it was to some maybe training in the camps, but no direct relationship with Al-Qaeda. And as a result, they conclude that there are 18,000 Al-Qaeda and that the United States is the prime target, and that a supposed Al-Qaeda leader made a statement that 4 million Americans will have to be killed as, quote, a prerequisite to any Islamic victory. Again, more and more disinformation, the great deception, in order to create terror here in the United States and throughout the world to rationalize the incredible expenditures which intend to be up to $1 trillion for the Pentagon and supposed homeland security. Because, as the International Institute for Strategic Studies states conclusively, 500,000 troops would be necessary to stabilize Iraq for the interests of the rulers, the imperial rulers. Ralph.
Let's put this for the moment in its current context. By a vote of 92-4, the United States Senate, led by the Democratic Party and the Republican Party in combination, have voted for the increase of troops up to double their current size in Iraq, and indeed have embraced, as you say, a projected increase in military budget of $1 trillion. And while this combined effort of the two parties, which are the one big property party with two names, proceeds, John Kerry, we are informed on April 30th, 2004, has attacked George Bush for ignoring imminent threats. John Kerry on Thursday accused President Bush of leaving the nation's chemical plants vulnerable because of his political ties to the industry. And Kerry goes on to state that this nation has to take every step to prevent our chemical plants from being turned imminently into weapons of mass destruction against our own people. Poor George Bush. The one thing you can't accuse him of doing is ignoring the prospect of imminent threats. The one thing you can't say about the Mortimer Snerd of the American political scene, George Bush, that he has failed to orchestrate the contrived category of terror. But here is John Kerry and the Democratic Party, outflanking him on the far right, accuses George Bush of leaving the nation's chemical plants vulnerable. Associated Press reporter attempted to question Kerry further about this, and when he was caught up with, he responded by saying, "There is going to be an attack on America's chemical plants, and we are not doing enough about it. We are too preoccupied with other issues. We are not organizing to examine and to attack the threat of imminent terror, imminent use of biological and chemical weapons, imminent destruction of our internal infrastructure by the terrorists abroad." John Kerry, 2004, on George Bush's insufficient invocation of the category of terror.
And this sets the basis for abrogation of our civil liberties. And that is why on Wednesday afternoon, May 26, U.S. Attorney General John Ashcroft and FBI Director Robert Mueller held a press conference in which they stated that Al-Qaeda terrorists are plotting a hot summer in the United States. And They said that the hunt is on, that they're tracking down two key suspects, a Pakistani woman, Hafia Siddiqui, a doctor of neurology who attended a university in the Boston area, and Adnan Shukrijama, an Al-Qaeda activist who spent time in Florida. And then they were tracking down others, that they were having a huge net in the United States because people... Al-Qaeda was going to attack here at some event in the United States, and that people throughout the United States should be vigilant for bombers in shopping malls and on American National Rail, subway, and bus lines. In fact, that no one should trust anyone, not their neighbors, and particularly in what the subtext of what they're saying is, you cannot trust anyone of any Arab heritage. And yet, Here is what we are getting. Since 9/11, there have been 85% more warrants issued by the secret Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Corps in Washington, over 1,700 secret wiretaps over the past couple of years. And the Justice Department has redefined its mission, according to the General Counsel of the Electronic Privacy Information Center, David Sobel. He said it's redefined its mission, and it's undergone a fundamental shift, both in the way it conducts surveillance and what is its objective. Let's look also at the Northern Command and what is happening with the combination of the military and the police state, the combining of the police state, creating this apparatus for control in the United States, not only with laws, but with the actual control of the populace. In National Defense Magazine, there are important articles. U.S. Northern Command Actively Enlisting Partners, June 2004, and the Blueprint for Homeland Security. And in it, they discuss the setting up of a joint interagency coordination group, the JIACG, with representatives of 46 defense and non-defense agency, both private industry and state and local government. And they have been carrying out tests throughout the United States, large-scale exercises called Determined Promise and Unified Defense that simulate air, maritime, and port threats and combine 57 state and federal agencies. And this has been going on over and again. And FEMA, too, has been conducting exercises as recently as May 11th and 12th and involved more than 2,500 federal employees that would determine how the federal government would continue operating in the face of a terrorist attack or another catastrophe. And employees went to 100 secret sites, and this was part of the Forward Challenge of Homeland Security Secretary Tom Ridge, and the undisclosed location, very similar to the Armageddon plan of what would take place and how martial law would be instituted if there were an attack on the United States, preparing themselves for an attack which they themselves would plan. Ralph?
The U.S. Northern Command Actively Enlisting Partners by Harold Kennedy on June 2004, put out by National Defense, as you are citing, is actually a blueprint for military rule and for the martial law state. The Joint Interagency Coordination Group, with representatives from 46 defense and non-defense agencies, as you cite, is in fact an integration of the U.S. Pacific, Southern, and Joint Forces Command, as well as the National Guard and Coast Guard, to operate facilities that are normally consigned to civilian administration, state and transportation departments, Central Intelligence Agency, Federal Emergency Management Agency, National Geospatial Intelligence Agency, FBI, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, Army Corps of Engineers, Geographical Survey, and Sandia National Laboratories to be taking control of civilian organizations, the only federal agencies that are not yet under their control. The Internal Revenue Service and United States Postal Service will be added. Every combatant command has a GIACG, and it plays a critical role in controlling civilian agencies in the United States. They will coordinate two large SEALs exercises, not just in terms of exercise, but in running the land, air, and sea control of civilian agencies in the United States. They organize and execute homeland defense and civil support missions from permanently assigned bases. Peterson Air Force Base in Colorado Springs, California. And it goes into, Colorado. And it goes into the Joint Task Force Consequent Management east of Fort Guillen, Georgia, the Joint Task Force Consequent Management west at Fort Sam Houston, Texas, the Joint Task Force 6 at Biggs Army Airfield Base at Fort Bliss, Texas, the Joint Force Headquarters National Capital Region at Fort Leslie McNair in Washington, D.C., the JFHQNCR, since January 2004, has prepared for command and control of entire areas of the United States for security, medical, chemical, and biological attack response. Since the 9/11 attacks, there have been 34,000 sorties of NORAD, 1,700 times in response to threats, said Air Force General Ralph E. Eberhardt, who commands both NORTHCOM and NORAD. This is a blueprint for military rule and for martial law, and that is the gravamen, that is the meaning of the blueprint for national security, subsequently issued again by National Defense in June 2004 under the authorship of Harold Kennedy, what is called the Defense Department's Comprehensive Plan, and detailing the Pentagon's emerging role as the protector of the United States itself.
Ralph, what is revealed in these articles is that the basic infrastructure of the United States, and this is whether it's national, state, or private, such as water systems and power systems, will be guarded and supervised by the Pentagon. And also, laws are passed, which we're not aware, and some of these are Title 32, which assumes state control, and most importantly, Title 10, which offers federal control status. And what is stated in this article is that National Guard, there are more than half a million National Air and Army National Guardsmen for the United States. And the Pentagon, quote, envisions these units would act under Title 32 of state control while on alert and have hip pocket orders to convert to Title 10 status. That means under the control of the Pentagon if required, and the requirement is only word from the President of the United States.
Son of Patriot Act also rises, June 14, 2004, Wired News. The bill known as the Anti-Terrorism Intelligence Tools Improvement Act of 2003, or H.R. 2179, now receiving support from both Democratic and Republican lawmakers. Here is what we are being prepared to endure. The bill grants the government power to investigate people without probable cause under a cloak of secrecy. Individuals being investigated have no opportunity to protest searches and seizures. The FBI does not need court orders or probable cause to obtain transaction records from patrons of libraries, internet services providers, telephone companies, casinos, travel agents, jewelers, car dealers, or other businesses. The FBI will be allowed to draft a national security letter stating that records are needed for a national security investigation without any specificity about the data being sought or the people being investigated. Not only this, but a provision provides provides a restriction on any disclosure by anyone under investigation or any request about the investigation of others. Any disclosure of the fact that these people are being investigated, their property or homes or businesses are being searched, or the people themselves being being detained will constitute a violation and, quote, the intent to obstruct an investigation and judicial proceeding with imprisonment of 5 years. The Son of Patriot Act is inextricably linked to the Northern Command plans. This, indeed, is the apparatus of the martial law state, which both Republicans and Democrats are embracing as the Kerry campaign escalates the flanking on the right by calling for increased national security and increased focus on the imminence of terror attacks. Let's just take one brief moment here to give a overview of what, in fact, has been the content of the litany of the prospect of terror. June 11, 2002, USA Today. Dirty bombs threaten the United States with imminent terror attack. U.S. intelligence agencies for years have now become aware that the imminence of an attack is chillingly real. And the article details the combined intelligence agency conviction, 2002, that an imminent attack of biological character is inevitable. Intelligence agency's terror attack on U.S. within 1 year. Newsmax, February 7, 2002. George Tenet in the Senate panel orchestrating the inevitability of these attacks. Al-Zarqawi planning to use chemical and biological weapons. DEBCA, November 15, 2003. Decatur Daily, CIA says terrorist attacks imminent. Air defenses around Washington strengthened. John Lumpkin, Associated Press, February 12, 2003. James Woolsey, March 24, 2004. The inevitable coming attacks on record with Greta Van Susteren. Dirty bomb fears, ABC News, January 7, 2004. Again, Associated Press, terrorists plan summer attack. I have at least 25 articles of the same kind throughout 2004. The constant litany, the constant terrorizing of the American people, the constant prospect of a devastating attack involving hundreds of thousands of casualties. This is the fake terror of a system in terminal crisis, brothers and sisters, that can only rule and sustain its exploitation and its repression through terrorizing the population of the United States with contrivance, with fakery, and with preparations for the martial law state. We will continue with this analysis and this documentation in our program next week. Meanwhile, prepare the resistance. Build that support for the fight back, because that is our imminent task before the prospect of martial law.
You are listening to Taking Aim with
Rao Shun
and Maya Shon. Our program today, The Great Deception, Fake Terror and a System in Crisis. You can reach us at takingaim@wbaa.org or takingaim@pacbell, that's PACBELL.net. Also, you can call us at 707-552-9992. Our internet site with our archive is www.takingaim.info. Audio tape and CD copies of this show and past shows are available. Please contact us for information. And also, please remember to appear each day in the court at the old federal courthouse in Foley Square. Be there at 9 a.m. Trial starts at 10 for the defense of Lynn Stewart. We'll be with you next week.